So today we'll speak from Canto 4, Chapter 4, Text 12. Chapter 4 of Canto 4 is titled Sati Quits Her Body. So Text 12, which is on the board, is as follows. Let's all repeat. दोषान् परेषां हि गुणेषु साधवो दोषान् परेषां हि गुणेषु साधवो घृणन्ति केचिन्न भवदोषो द्विजा घृणन्ति केचिन्न भवादृशो द्विजा गुणांश्च फाल्गुण बहुलीकरिष्णवो गुणांश्च फाल्गुण बहुलीकरिष्णवो महत्तमास्तेष्वदि तद् भवानघम् महत्तमास्तेष्वविदाद् भवान् अघम् दोषान् फॉल्ट्स परेशान् ऑफ अदर्स ही फॉर गुणेषु इन द क्वालिटीज साधवः साधुस Krinanti, find, kechit, some, na, not, bhavadrisha, like you, dvija, o twice born, gunan, qualities, cha, and, falgun, small, bahuli karishnavaha, greatly magnifies, mahattamaha, the greatest persons, Teshu, among them, Avidat, find, Bhavan, you, Agham, the fault. Translation. Twice born Daksha, a man like you can simply find fault in the qualities of others. Twice born Daksha, a man like you can simply find fault in the qualities of others. Lord Shiva, however, not only finds no faults with others' qualities, but if someone has a little good quality, he magnifies it greatly. Unfortunately, you have found fault with such a great soul. King Daksha is addressed here by his daughter Sati as Dvija, twice born. Twice born refers to the higher classes of men, namely the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. In other words, a Dvija is not an ordinary man, but one who has studied the Vedas, the Vedic literature, from a spiritual master and can discriminate between good and bad. Therefore, it is supposed that he understands logic and philosophy. Because he has to discriminate between good and bad, it is supposed that he understands logic and philosophy. Sati, Daksha's daughter, put before him sound arguments. There are some highly qualified persons who accept only the good qualities of others. There are some highly qualified persons who accept only the good qualities of others. Just as a bee is always interested in the honey in the flower and does not consider the thorns and color, the thorns and colors, highly qualified persons who are uncommon accept only the good qualities of others, not considering their bad qualities. Whereas the common man can judge what are good qualities and what are bad qualities. Among the uncommonly good souls, there are still gradations. And the best good soul is one who accepts an insignificant asset of a person and magnifies that good quality. Lord Shiva is also called Asutosh, which refers to one who is satisfied very easily and who offers to any person the highest level of benediction. For example, once a devotee of Lord Shiva wanted the benediction that whenever he touched someone on the head, that person's head would at once be separated from his trunk. Lord Shiva agreed. Although the benediction asked was not very commendable because the devotee wanted to kill his enemy, Lord Shiva considered the devotee's good quality in worshipping and satisfying him and granted the benediction. Thus, Lord Shiva accepted his bad qualities as magnificently good qualities. But Sati accused her father, "You are just the opposite. Although Lord Shiva has so many good qualities and no bad qualities at all, you have accepted him as bad and found fault with him. Because of your accepting his good qualities to be bad, instead of your becoming the most exalted soul, you have become the most fallen. A man becomes the greatest soul by accepting the goodness of others' qualities. A man becomes the greatest soul by accepting the goodness of others' qualities. But by unnecessarily considering others' good qualities to be bad, you have become the lowest of the fallen souls." Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tadati Sva Padantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Panghum Langayate Girim Yatkripatam Maham Vande Sri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam namaskritya Naram chaiva narottamam Devim sarasvatim vyasam Tatho jayamudhirayet Nashtaprayeshu abhadreshu Nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavati uttamashloke Tir Bhavatir Naishtiki. Hare Krishna. Twice born Daksha, a man like you can simply find fault in the qualities of others. Lord Shiva, however, not only finds no faults with others' qualities, but if someone has a good quality, he magnifies it greatly. Unfortunately, you have found fault with such a great soul. So, Daksha is a very powerful Prajapati, we all know that. He has been vested with the responsibility, given the responsibility of progeny, of procreating human beings. He is a great personality, undoubtedly. But, as one becomes greater and greater, as one becomes more popular, more powerful, more influential, more scholarly, more recognized, without our own knowledge, pride starts coming into our heart. So, Daksha was no exception to this. This whole pastime essentially centers around the principle of how all of us have to be very careful not to become proud in our journey of Krishna consciousness. Because the Lord, this is one Panda in Puri told me when I was visiting Jagannath Puri 2 years back. So I asked him, what begets the darshan of Lord Jagannath? So many people go. Sometimes you get that special darshan, sometimes you don't get darshan. So he said, it is not timing, it is not strategy, it is not anything which begets the darshan of Lord Jagannath. Lord Jagannath gives darshan to anyone who approaches him in a humble mood. Lord Jagannath does not look for perfection. That is why he is considered very merciful. Merciful is a personality who does not expect perfection. So Lord Jagannath is okay with all kinds of imperfections. Sinful people can approach him, no problem. You have committed sins, no problem. You are ashamed, no problem. But the one thing which he will not tolerate is pride. You cannot approach Lord Jagannath with pride in our heart. So this is the Panda. Of course, Srila Prabhupada keeps telling us all this, but it also came from the Panda, from another person. So it registered very deeply into my mind. So we see that Daksha organized for a major yajna. Of course, the intentions were noble for the welfare of the world. And in the assembly, when Daksha was entering the yajna, people had already assembled, and so Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva were also assembled there. Everyone stood up to greet Daksha, except two personalities, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. While Daksha acknowledged Lord Brahma's position as his father and did not mind the fact that Lord Brahma did not get up, he did not pardon Lord Shiva. While he acknowledged the greatness of Lord Brahma, he failed to acknowledge the greatness of Lord Shiva, because both of them are Mahajanas. So he acknowledged one Mahajana, he did not acknowledge the other Mahajana. And he took offense that Lord Shiva did not stand up to greet him. Lord Shiva was in Krishna Smaran. So Lord Shiva is like almost like an avadut, always in Krishna Smaran. In fact, Lord Shiva says that, you know, in one of the cantos, I believe it is third canto, Lord Shiva says that I am third or second probably. I believe it's third. Lord Shiva also, which is that verse? Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. So in that verse, Lord Shiva tells Sati, in fact it is in this section only, I think it comes somewhere. Yeah. So he tells Parvati that I am also engaged 24 hours in smaran of Lord Krishna, Vasudeva consciousness, he says. So in his consciousness, he does not get up. Now that's not an offense at all, but Daksha, because of his false pride, and because he cannot understand, he doesn't have the spiritual maturity to understand the exalted position of Lord Shiva, he takes offense and he starts blaspheming Lord Shiva in public. Lord Shiva, in a very dignified manner, leaves, though Lord Shiva could have finished him on the spot. But Lord Shiva chose not to do that. He chose his response and he left with dignity. Subsequently, And Sati knew this, that her husband was not treated properly, rather insulted by her own father. So Lord Shiva leaves, but after some time another yajna is organized by Daksha Prajapati. And this time, as if to add insult to injury, Lord Shiva is not on the invitation list. That is even worse. So, but Sati has a great desire to go to the yajna, to catch up with her relatives. She has a great desire to participate there. So she tries to convince Lord Shiva, who says that you may go ahead. No, I can't. So and then Sati leaves to participate in the yajna. When she reaches there, she finds that she is welcomed nicely by her mother and sisters, but her father doesn't acknowledge her presence at all. And this deeply hurts her. What hurts her more, that while Daksha has arranged oblations for every personality that is there, there is no oblation for Lord Shiva. So this is insulting for any woman who has such a tejiyamsam husband like Lord Shiva, highly realized personality. And it is very natural for her then to respond to this situation with the words she chose to speak. So she says, "Twice born Daksha, a man like you can simply find fault in the qualities of others. Lord Shiva, however, not only finds no faults with others' qualities, but someone who has a little good quality, he magnifies it. Unfortunately, you have found fault with such a great soul." So there's a conversation that's going. She's pouring out her mind now to her father and making her father realize that his consciousness is not simply there. So, there are two aspects which come here. One we talked about is the aspect of pride, which is a central theme in this section. But the symptom of pride, which is very common amongst all of us, is the symptom of pride is sadhu ninda. Looking down or blaspheming other devotees. This is nothing but a symptom of pride. Now, why do we do this sadhu ninda? We saw that Daksha had to pay a very heavy price for this offense of his. Now, why do we get into sadhu ninda? So, there are two aspects which we could discuss. There can be many aspects, but two aspects come to mind. One is the sheer fact that a devotee is neophyte can lead to sadhu ninda. For example, Prabhupada says that a neophyte devotee is one, a Kanishta Adhikari is one, who acknowledges the Lord but does not have the maturity in spiritual life to acknowledge the devotee. So in one sense, when a Kanishta Adhikari comes in front of an exalted personality, the Kanishta Adhikari may not know how to behave, may not know the principle of Tadvidhi Pranipatena Pariprashnena Sevaya. The Kanishta Adhikari will have questions but will not know what is the sadachar or behavior under which the questions have to be administered to this great personality. That the Kanishta Adhikari will not know. So often we would, I remember once in Toronto when I was there, His Holiness Bhakti Brihat Bhagwat Swami Maharaj, who is our Bhakti Shastri teacher also in Toronto, he had come to address a seminar, and there was the father of this devotee who went right through Maharaj. I mean, it was really rude. The conversation was so heavy, so heavy. So that son was embarrassed that how can he talk to like that to my, Siksha Guru. And he was embarrassed, but then he had to literally take his father to the other room because the father had some misconceptions about ISKCON. So this is akin to what we call in criminal sections as a hot-blooded murder. This is a hot-blooded murder. Hot-blooded murder has got lesser punishment. So, he, out of his pure ignorance and whatever views that he had, and the fact that he was himself a neophyte in bhakti, he could not understand who he is talking to, a personality who has dedicated his life for spreading Krishna consciousness. So many dangerous journeys this personality has undertaken in South Africa in preaching, and who are we talking to? You have no understanding. There you go with your questions and with your own false ego, right? Thinking that you know everything. So, this could be called as a hot-blooded. So this is one reason why, because we don't know how to deal with these devotees, we are ignorant of their superior position, then we could commit sadhu ninda. But worse than that, much, much worse than that, is cold-blooded murder. Which means systematically making a plan to vilify someone through subtle messages passed through people who trust you. And then using the trust of the people who trust you to send messages through the congregation about your person, whoever you are envious of or whoever you want to offend. That is very, very dangerous. And that we see. We see everywhere that happening. And that is the biggest threat to our own spiritual life and to the unity of ISKCON. So this is a cold-blooded campaign. So why does one engage in cold-blooded campaign. Why does one have to do this? So, from hearing from various saintly personalities, we understand that we engage in these activities simply because we are not happy in Krishna consciousness. If we are not happy and fulfilled in Krishna consciousness within our own hearts, then we have to seek happiness somewhere else. If we have not attained the level of purification through the dint of our seriousness in sadhana and seva, then just the fact that the purification has not happened in our heart means that those anarthas are still present. Many times, we have left quite a bit of material life, thanks to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the disciplic succession. We have left quite a bit of material life and come into Krishna consciousness. But not all our desires which we wanted to enjoy in our material life have got fulfilled till now. Neither have we come to a point where we are purified in bhakti. So we are in a transition stage. So many times we try to fulfill certain desires within the association of devotees, because those devotees have not got fulfilled outside. Maybe in corporate life somewhere, we don't know, or in business or whatever. And because we carry anya abhilasha, there are other things which we want out of bhakti. Therefore, when those other things we don't even get here, then we start trying to get those other things through other means. For example, someone who wants to be respected as the greatest kirtanier, for example, or someone wants the greatest preacher or whatever, then there is a competitive mentality that may come in. Because that competitive mentality is coming from our education system. That competitive mentality is coming from our corporate appraisal system, where everyone has, there's a cutthroat competition to survive there. So everyone is trying to prove that he is better than the other person. So that momentum then flows into the bhakti aspect also, and then we have this desire that I should be recognized, I should be in the center, I should be recognized as the best, I should be recognized for whatever I have done. Sometimes we can still be humble enough to accept that, okay, I am not getting recognized enough. But that humility stops the moment someone else who is our peer gets recognized. Till that time we were okay. Trinadapijoni chena tarori vasavishna amanina maradena ketane sadhikari. But why him? Why could Krishna also not put that person in a situation where he is also not recognized and humble? Why only me? No, so the mind is very, very tricky. It gives messages. So, the acharyas have said that we have to make this mind our friend. We have to introspect quite a bit of... It's not enough to study the scriptures. It is required to sometimes go back and introspect within our own minds as to where I am. Why am I doing whatever I am doing? Why am I thinking the way I am doing? What do I want? And when we introspect that, we will realize that the problem is not outside of us. It is just within us. So at least that is the first step in seeking improvement somewhere. So the more and more we do that, the more and more we will also realize that many of our questions in Krishna consciousness are getting answered just through the program of hearing, reading and introspecting. So, we see that this was a cold-blooded response. Maybe Daksha's response the first time can be called as hot-blooded, because Lord Shiva didn't get up on the spur of a moment. He said, oh, how can you not get up? And then he did whatever he did. He spoke just... But the second time, by not inviting Lord Shiva, he's passing a message to everyone else, this personality is not important. So you all also do not have to respect him. That's the kind of theme that you understand. So that's cold-blooded. That's consciously trying to put down someone in front of everyone else to secure your position and to justify the mistake which you did earlier. Rather than being apologetic, he's trying to set a scene by which, you know, people will think differently of Lord Shiva. Like that. So this is very dangerous, and this is what is called as Hati Mata offense. The first offense, the hot-blooded, may still be pardoned, but the cold-blooded offense is Hati Mata offense, because that is being done schemingly, very cheekily it is being done. And that is not pardoned, and that leads to definite loss of Krishna bhakti. Krishna's mercy will not come. Unless and otherwise, then later on, you know, the devotee is genuinely repentant. So, in devotional life, many times, we fail to also understand the difference between responsibilities and privileges. There are two things that are there. Our responsibilities and certain privileges which we have. For example, let us say a spiritual master is visiting Melbourne. So there is a mad rush to cook for the spiritual master. And if someone doesn't get an opportunity for driving the spiritual master to the airport or for cooking for the spiritual master, then eventually the God family stops speaking to each other. Okay. So two devotees who are otherwise very nice before the spiritual master came, instead of increased bonhomie after the spiritual master's visit, stay away. And sometimes then people will say, I have decided to stay away from the God family. Too much is going on, you know, something like that. Okay. So sometimes we fail to understand what is the difference between responsibility and privilege. For example, if someone really wants to serve their spiritual master, is cooking the only way of serving? Do we really believe that's the only way we can serve? Or driving to the airport or garlanding the spiritual master, is that the only way of service? Actually, in the name of service, sometimes our mind is seeking privileges, not service. Service to spiritual master is what Srila Prabhupada taught us. Hardly he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj few times. You will never see Prabhupada with a, you know, with a selfie with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, or you know, garlanding and, you know, like that and whatever. Or with the disciplic succession standing in the center of a photograph with everyone. No. None of that sort. When did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj give him an instruction, and when did Srila Prabhupada at the age of 70 he went? So Srila Prabhupada has taught us actually. It is not required. So we have to really understand our mind. Is it seeking privileges or is it really seeking service? As I heard in one lecture, there is one position which is always vacant. Position of servant is not vacant. But position of servant of servant of servant is always vacant. There is no competition for that position. So if you want real service, if we all of us, and that's including myself, I have no authority to speak on the subject because I myself like that. So obviously, with increased introspection, we come to this realization that actually if I want to serve, I can serve and be happy. Nobody is stopping me. But it is anya abhilasha which is making me miserable in bhakti and giving me the tendency to see faults in devotees and thereby, over years, never have any relationships with devotees. So someday, by Krishna's mercy, by our chanting and by prayers to the Lord, by repeated prayers. And this morning also, you know, today, you know, last month of Kartik, at least, you know, I had put a small prayer this morning to Radharani. Let my appreciation for devotees go up. Let this garbage inside my mind, you please take away this garbage. If you can do anything, if you are a little bit pleased with me, with anything that I have done, remove this garbage. Otherwise, I will not progress in bhakti beyond this. Kartik month after Kartik month will go on. Yes, we may do so many austerities, etc., etc., but it's all fine. But if those austerities do not lead to humility within the heart, if it doesn't lead to spontaneous attraction for serving the Lord and recognition of His devotees, then it is Sharamaya Evahi Kevalam. Then it is just a question of, okay, some austerities have been done. But what has happened to the consciousness? Has our character changed? Has our personality changed? Has it had any impact on the impurities within our heart? So that needs to be thought about. Now, let us talk about great devotees, Mahabhagavats. We talked about Kanishta mentality and offense. Great devotees like Mahabhagavats or Mahajanas, they however are great because they are indifferent to honor and dishonor. That is what makes them great. They are not indifferent to honor and dishonor because they are great. They are great because they are indifferent to honor and dishonor. That's what we need to understand. Still, though they are great, even if one offends them, they do not take such offense. However, if we are the one who are in that position of having offended such a Mahabhagavat, it is mentioned that we have to seek forgiveness directly from the person who we have offended. And then you will be forgiven. However, there is another philosophy which is coming in Srimad Bhagavatam, another learning, just I think next verse probably, tomorrow or day after it's coming, 4.4.13. If anyone of you have your mobile phones, you can, or Bhagavatam, you can go through that. Next verse is it? Yeah. It is said that though the personality who you offended may forgive you, the dust of his lotus feet still holds you accountable. I was always wondering, what does this mean? The dust of his feet is... So, I went through some Acharya's commentaries on this. And they have said that the Lord is certainly not the dust of his devotee. Agreed? The Lord is Lord. We are the dust at the lotus feet of the Lord. Right? The Lord is not the dust under the lotus feet of his devotee. Though he wishes that, the Lord wants to become the dust of the lotus feet of his devotee, but practically that is, Lord is Lord. That's why he is Bhagavan. Ekale Ishwara Krishna Arasava Bhritya. We are all servants. So that position is his as Bhagavan. So what does this dust represent then? So the Acharya's comment that this dust represents the servants of these Mahabhagavats who we have offended. If I offend a Mahabhagavat, the dust represents the servants of that Mahabhagavat who are fulfilling the Lord's most cherished desire to serve his devotees. Let me explain. So it is said that though these Mahabhagavats per se, they never actually accept any service from the Lord. They can't think of accepting service from the Lord. Mahabhagavats do not accept service from the Lord. Neither do they want to accept service from anybody else. That is why they are Mahabhagavats in their consciousness. However, they mercifully, on behalf of the Lord, they accept some services. For example, the disciples of the Mahabhagavat may take care of some of their bodily and other necessities. But the Mahabhagavat is very mercifully accepting their services to give the disciples mercy and opportunities in Krishna consciousness for their purification. So thus, it is through the servants of great devotees that the Lord's desire, please hear carefully, it is through the servants of great devotees that the Lord's desire to see his devotees personally served and glorified is fulfilled. Am I with you all? So there is a Lord is desiring that my devotees be glorified, and that goal the Lord, the servants of this Mahabhagavat are trying to fulfill that by serving this and glorifying their spiritual master. So though the Mahabhagavat may pardon the dust of his lotus feet, the servants of the Mahabhagavat may not have pardoned us. So here we see. And it is said that because the Lord is present inside the servants of these Mahabhagavats, therefore when the servants of the Mahabhagavats takes offense, the Lord also takes offense. So very nicely, you know, this has been delineated. Now let us come back to Sati. Two personalities are there, Sati and Shiva. Two different responses to the same situation. Lord Shiva took no offense. He is Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. There is no hankering, no lamentation, nothing. As if nothing happened. So Lord Shiva, in one sense, has ticked the box here. He has demonstrated how a Mahabhagavat should be. But a question will come into our heart, but what about Sati? Why can't she be like a Mahabhagavat? Why couldn't she have pardon? That could be a question that can come. Is Sati vindictive in this situation? So, in a later canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which canto is Parshuram's pastime? It is, anyone remembers? Kartavirya Arjun, Parshuram, Yamadagni. Ninth canto, is it? Okay, thank you. So, in that, yeah, it's a ninth canto. The ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Parshurama goes and destroys the entire clan of Kshatriyas and restores, hands over the cow back to his father, Jamadagni. Kartavirya Arjun and his entire race is decimated. and he comes and offers back, which father will not be proud? Very good, my dear son. If you go typical Bollywood style, he'll say that you have kept the name of your father, you have kept the honor of the family, you have destroyed. No. But what is the response of Jamadagni? Jamadagni says, why did you kill so many people? And in that, there is a very beautiful verse comes. This is one of my own favorite verses in Srimad Bhagavatam. It says, this is 9.15.40, if you want to register. 9.15.40. Shamaye rochate lakshmir, brahmi sauri yatha prabha. Shaminam asu bhagavam, tushyate harir ishvaraha. Very beautiful verse. It says, it is the duty of a brahmana. It is the duty of a brahmana to culture the quality of forgiveness. It is the duty of a brahmana to culture the quality of forgiveness, which is illuminating like the sun. The quality of forgiveness is illuminating like the sun. And then it says, Tushyate Hari Rishwaraha. The Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, Shri Hari or Krishna, is always pleased with those people who have a forgiving nature. He is pleased with this quality of forgiveness. So therefore, and it is said it is a quality of a brahmana. So many of us have got Brahmin initiation in the recent past or many years before. While generally we think of Brahmin initiation as an authorization to do deity service and to chant the Gayatri Mantra and to cook in the fire for the Lord, fine, all that is fine, perfectly fine. But Brahmin initiation also means cultivation of qualities, not only development of skills of bhakti in cooking or deity worship. It actually, Lord Krishna is bhavagrahi. So the whole principle of initiation has to be understood as the next change in consciousness which one must cultivate, one having got Brahman initiation. And one such quality is very clearly coming across is a brahmana has to be forgiving. Many times we may become very adept at doing a particular service, maybe deity worship, whatever, or cooking or whatever kind of brahminical services. We may start getting recognized by the congregation as being very excellent in that service. Prabhuji, you are the best. Nobody can dress like you. Nobody can cook like you, or whatever, 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 whatever. Nobody can be as punctual as you. Nobody can be as austere as you. Nobody can be as regular as you. Fine, all that is required. No doubt about that. Otherwise, the basics are not in place. However, having had all these things in place, if relationships are not in place, if because we are as such very punctual, very perfect, if we start looking down and letting loose our tongue on other devotees who may be struggling in that situation, then we have to really come back to this point that the Lord is bhavagrahi. Also, forgiving others, even if others have done a fault in maybe doing some seva, but maybe I have perfected it to such an extent that I may not have those faults, it is still the duty of a brahmana to forgive and then encourage and inspire the other person rather than putting up the person, how did you do this? You know, how can you do like this, Prabhuji? That is definitely not a brahminical language, right? We may be brahmana initiated, that is different, but that's not brahminical language. Okay. So Brahminism doesn't only mean privileges to do certain services or taking up responsibilities or developing skill sets in certain areas of devotional service, but it fundamentally means change of consciousness, lifting the consciousness to another level. So now we are talking about sati. Now sati obviously is being hard with her father now. See the language that she's saying. Twice born Daksha, again going back. A man like you can simply fall in the quality. She is talking to her father right now, right? So it is mentioned by the acharyas that though Shiva did not take offense, Parvati, in one sense, is not being offensive. It may seem like that Parvati is offensive here. But Parvati is actually making her father accountable. Sometimes the choice of words may not be intended to be vindictive at the other person, But it could simply mean to reinforce the fact that you are accountable now for whatever you have done. So she is conveying accountability to her father. And Acharya say that in love, this is natural and it is appropriate. Your husband is almost the supreme personality of Godhead. He is a Mahajana. What has he done wrong? What did Lord Shiva do? There was no offense. Even if there was some offense, there could have been a discussion. There was no offense. And then obviously it's the love of a chaste wife towards her husband. So it's a very natural reaction. So there is nothing wrong in what Sati's response is here. So the Acharyas are clarifying. And obviously, if you take Sati also as a disciple of Lord Shiva, which she is, because Lord Shiva is not only her husband, but Lord Shiva is her guru also. Right? The husband is a guru. A tejiyamsam husband is automatically the guru of a chaste wife. Right? So, again, that same principle which we talked about earlier, that the dust of a devotee still holds you accountable, even if the Mahabhagavat has forgiven you. So this was a very nice revelation which the Acharyas have put. Now, however, having said all this, it does not mean that disciples will never forgive offenders, just that they will hold the offenders accountable. So forgiveness has to be there in all of us. If we can't forgive someone, why should others forgive us? Right. So the only course for offenders here, it is mentioned in conclusion, that is to approach the devotee they have offended and seek forgiveness. And thereby, the dust of the devotee is also satisfied. The dust holds one accountable. The dust holds one accountable for offenses, not because it is vindictive, but to give offenders a chance to cleanse themselves. Now, this is a very important point. The dust of the lotus feet of that Mahabhagavat holds one accountable, not because it is vindictive, but it gives the offender a chance to cleanse themselves regardless of whether the offended devotee is in the planet or not. Sometimes we can offend a devotee and by that time we rectify, the devotee has left the planet. That will be very sad, right? So that accountability is still there, right? So though we did not get an opportunity to make amends with that devotee, but we still have an opportunity to be in shame, sincere reformation within our hearts. Thereby, the dust of the lotus feet can pardon us. If this is not addressed, as we all know, devotional life is a big journey. Shraddha, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti, nishtha, ruchi, asatti, bhava and prema. So many stages are there in bhakti. With most of us, at least for myself, somewhere in the anartha nivritti platform, still struggling. God knows in which lifetime it will go away. But it is said that even if we were to go to the bhava platform, the vestiges of Vaishnava Prad, the traces of Vaishnava Prad can give us reaction even in the bhava platform. And a case in point is Maharaj Bharat. Maharaj Bharat, it was questioned, he was in bhava platform, he left the whole world, he went to the forest, he had sincere intentions of going back to Godhead, he was worshipping the Lord. From where from did the thought of a deer come and distract his bhajan? So the Acharyas have said that this could be the results of traces of offenses in his maybe many years back or in some lifetime, right? So offenses can chase us right till bhava stage. So one has to be very careful. So that's a big message that's coming in this section. Before Mahatma Prabhu asks me. So there are four other things today other than the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. So do I have your permission to quickly go through those four things? Today being last month of Kartik. Yes? Thank you. Okay. So today is the appearance day of Sripad Nimbarkacharya. It is said in the scriptures, Sampradaya vihina ye mantraste nishphala mataha. Which means, unless one is affiliated with a genuine bhakti sampradaya, bhakti will not manifest in this lifetime. There are so many institutions which talk about spirituality. But how many institutions talk about bhakti towards God. Even if some institutions use the word bhakti, there is no process of cultivating such bhakti. Bhakti is not an activity of the body. Bhakti is an activity of the soul. Bhakti is not keeping the body fit. Bhakti is about keeping the consciousness pure. And all the scriptures have unanimously declared that the only way of purifying our consciousness is chanting the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Yes, there may be some subtle differences. Someone will say, I am Gujarati, I will chant, oh, Shri Krishna Sharanam Mama. Somebody will say, I am from Tamilian, I will chant, Om Namo Narayana. Fine, but the principle of chanting cannot be compromised. That is the only principle. Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Namaiva Kevalam. So if we think that by not chanting, I'll do a nice person, I'll do social work. There are so many people who talk this. No? I believe in being good to others. These are all cliched statements. We have heard it umpteen number of times. I'm not saying we should not be good people. That is just coming to the human platform. As Vaishnavas, the first thing is to be a good person. Otherwise, there is no question of devotee. But it is a necessary condition, not a sufficient condition, and this many people do not know after years. So one has to understand, it's not just being a good person, just doing some cleaning in some, you know, just clean the garbage in some society or help the poor people, and then Krishna will come with a flute and then you'll go back to Godhead. No. Just doing those activities simply will beget you what is called as the heavenly planet, Swarga Loka. And when your good activities, karma is over, then punah we have to come back into this material world. Rather, the process of Krishna consciousness is to remove lust, anger, envy, greed and pride that comes by thinking that I am a very good man, I have done a lot of social work. So the pride also has to go away, and that will not go away unless you adopt a process which is outside of the three modes of material nature. One who is a good person, who is in the mode of goodness, cannot recognize that good mode of goodness is also binding till the time he or she takes a process which is beyond the mode of goodness, which is called as transcendental goodness or Shuddha Sattva. And that process is bhakti only, and the process is only chanting. There is no other way that we can do this. Now, to re-emphasize this message, because this message gets lost in the deluge of Maya in Kali Yuga, and everyone just ends up becoming a good man. Okay, so therefore, the acharyas come down again and again to say that bhakti is the only way. Of course, depending upon Kala Desha Patra, they give different messages, different aspects of bhakti, time, place, and circumstance. So the four sampradayas which are there, which is, who are the sampradayic acharyas originally? Where are they coming from? Comes from Lord Brahma, comes from Lakshmiji, comes from the Lord Shiva and Chatukumaras. Okay. So, out of that, the one which came from Lakshmi Devi, she gave her the responsibility of whatever she wanted to communicate in bhakti to Srila Ramanujacharya. And that is the Sri Sampradaya, whose philosophy is Vishishta Advaitavad. We will not get into all that because there is no time for that. Then, what about Lord Brahma? Lord Brahma gave that responsibility to Madhvacharya. He empowered Madhvacharya to communicate that message, which is called as Dvaitavad. Lord Shiva or Rudra gave that responsibility to empowerment to Vishnu Swami. In fact, Vishnu Swami was the first Acharya of the four bona fide sampradayas. That is called as Shuddha Advaitavad. And finally, the four Kumaras, the Chatukumaras, they vested this responsibility on Nimbarkacharya, whose appearance is today, whose philosophy is called as Chintya Dvaita Advaitavad. Don't ask me anything more than that. But still, there are some differences which we will come to, the key things we will talk about. So, briefly, Nimbarkacharya was born in a city called Vaidhuryapatna, which is also called as Tailangadesh, which today is called as Telangana, over which so much fight is going on, right? The place is also called as Mungerapatna. So right from childhood, he was born to very pious parents. One important point to note here is, his parents' name is Aruni and Jayanti Dev. They were very pious, Vaishnavas. Now what is important is to know is, Aruni was the son of Aruna Muni. Aruni was the son of Aruna Muni. Now, who was Aruna Muni? Aruna Muni was a personality who was assembled when Sukadeva Goswami was speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. And this reference is in Canto 1, Chapter 19, Text 11. So, Nimbarkacharya comes in that lineage. At the end of Dwapar, in the full moon of Kartik month, this child was born, this great personality was born, samskaras were performed, he was sent to the Gurukul. As with all other acharyas, he mastered the Vedas very quickly. Not only did he become a Vedic scholar, but more importantly, he had this deep desire for self-realization and Krishna Bhakti. He remained a Naishtika Brahmachari without marrying, and then at an appropriate time took sannyasa primarily for propagating Vaishnavism, which means Nimbarkacharya was a Goshti Anandi saint, not a Bhajan Anandi. He went all the way to Nandagram from South India, where he had darshan of Lord Krishna, and he composed 25 spontaneous a prayer of 25 verses spontaneously on Lord Krishna, which is called as Savishesha Nirvishesha Shri Krishna Stava. Savishesha Nirvishesha Shri Krishna Stava. And he offered these prayers at the lotus feet of the Lord. It is said that the place where he worshipped is a cottage near Govardhan Hill, where he did his bhajan, which today is called as Nimbagram. One pastime, famous pastime of his was when a Jain Sampradayik Muni came to him. So there are two types of dharmas, Nastika Dharma and Anastika Dharma. So certain religions like Jainism come under Nastika Dharma, where they do not believe in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes, there are a lot of practices and rituals, no doubt about it. There are a lot of austerities also, but there is no personal concept of the personality of Godhead. That is not there. So the Jain Sampradaya Muni had come for a debate. He had come to a debate with Lord Nimbaditya, and to cut a long story short, Nimbarkacharya, being the pure Vaishnava saint, defeated all the arguments of the Jain Muni and established the true import of Vedic principles. What is the goal of all Vedas? Vedaischa sarva ahameva vedya vedanta krit vedavid evachaha. By all the Vedas, one must surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna, otherwise it is useless, that knowledge. So, now, this Jain Muni was given Krishna prasadam to eat, and it was nearing sunset. So, there is the principle in Jainism that they don't eat after sunset. Of course, nowadays nobody follows anything. Even Jains are eating onion garlic. It has just become Jain restaurant, that's all. So who is following true Jainism anyway? Half the people are busy in television and cinema, right? And it is there and everywhere. Who is following Hinduism also anyway? True Hinduism nobody is following. Very few people. Durlabh. So true religion is anyway not being accepted, but still this saintly personality was a genuine follower of Jainism. So he was following this austerity not to take anything after sunset. And Nimbarkacharya wanted to give him the Mahaprasadam of Lord Krishna. So it is said that he went out, climbed up a neem tree, and he kept the sun in its position so that the sun won't set. So that the mercy can be given to this Jain Acharya. Another interpretation of this pastime is also that he invoked the Sudarshan Chakra of the Lord, and the Sudarshana kept the light intact. And for this pastime, he is called as Nimbarkacharya. Neem tree, Arka or Aditya means sun. So, Nimbarkacharya. So, this is the pastime. Of course, no doubt that Jain Muni, whoever was there, he surrendered to Nimbarkacharya and became a Vaishnava saint thereafter. So, such a powerful preacher. Srila Nimbarkacharya has also commented on Vedanta Sutra, which is called as Vedanta Parijata Saurabha. Plus, he has written so many other literatures. He established the famous Nimbarka Sampradaya, which is very, very prevalent in Vrindavan. Of course, they have mathas, 15 mathas all over the country, and few more even in places like Punjab and all, they have these mathas, many more in Vrindavan. And in Nimbagram, near Govardhan Hill, Radha Krishna deities, his Radha Krishna deities are being worshipped, and his Padukas are also being worshipped. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and thanks to Gopal Rindesh Prabhu, I was talking to him during Prabhupada Aarti today. So, Gopal Rindesh Prabhu was enlightening me that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took, appreciated, glorified so many aspects of other sampradayas. In the sampradaya of Srila Ramanujacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appreciated the principle of service, unalloyed service, and sadhu seva, service to the Lord and Vaishnavas. From Madhvacharya, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appreciated the fact that they were against Mayavad philosophies. They were against Mayavadis who say God is impersonal. Who say God is only impersonal. Sorry. God is both impersonal and personal. But people say that God is only impersonal. And his form is Maya. That is bogus philosophy. Right? So, he took that principle of speaking against Mayavad philosophy from Madhvacharya. From Sri Vallabhacharya, coming under Pushtimarg, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the principle of Raganuga, spontaneous bhakti to the Lord, the way Laddu Gopal is worshipped, very spontaneously. Not in the mood of awe and reverence, but the mood of affection. And the highest principle he appreciated from the that Nimbarkis had that, which is what? The worship of Srimati Radharani. That came from, that was practiced in Nimbarka Sampradaya. So Nimbarkacharya's greatest contribution is establishing the supreme position of not only Srimati Radharani, but establishing that no one can love the Lord as much as the gopis did. That brings us to the next point of Krishna Rasayatra, which is there today. So it's all coming in a very nice coincidence or Lord's mercy. So today is the day of Krishna Rasayatra. Obviously it's the day of Rasa Leela. Rasa Leela happens twice. Once it happens in what is called a Sharad Purnima, which has already happened, it has already gone, which is the first Rasa Leela of the autumn month, the full moon. And the second Rasa Leela happens today, towards the fag end of the Kartik month. It's the second full moon day of the autumn season where this Rasa Leela is celebrated. Now the second Rasa Leela is celebrated more in Bengal than it is celebrated in Vrindavan. That is just information. What is important for us, obviously I don't have the qualifications to speak on Rasa Leela, okay? So, but because of the mercy of my Bhagavatam teacher Keshav Prabhu, I will highlight 5 points which we were able to understand being under his guidance, of what 5 lessons we can learn from Rasa Leela very quickly. Lesson number 1, when the call of Lord Krishna comes, we must leave. Lesson number 1, gopis got the call of Krishna. Some were dressing their children, some were feeding their children, some were serving their husbands, dropped everything and rushed. Of course, we should not misunderstand this or prematurely imitate the gopis. Prabhuji, tomorrow onwards, no cooking, I am attending Bhagavatam class. No, not like that. Or I have no feeding anywhere. No, not like that. That's a very crude understanding of it. So, we will not get into that, but I am sure everyone understands. So, when the call of Lord Krishna comes, we must leave, because there's nothing more is important than serving Lord Krishna. So, the gopis dropped everything, number 1. Number 2, when they left, the gopis' mood was not to enjoy with Lord Krishna, but to give Lord Krishna pleasure and becoming the objects of his enjoyment. That is the second mood which the gopis establish. Third is that becoming free from pride and prestige and becoming humble. Now, how does this come into the context of Rasa Leela specifically? Is that the highest thing that any lady keeps with herself is what? Her chastity, which she will never give up for anything else. And chastity is the highest quality of a woman. That's why so many places in Bhagavatam we said, lady is known by her chastity. Right? That chastity, however, can sometimes give pride. The pride of being chaste. So, Rasa Leela brings out this very fine point that even that pride one has to give up. So the gopis left their husbands and ran to Lord Krishna, not fearing what people will talk about them. So in the service of Lord Krishna, there is nothing, there is no moral principle which is above the principle of serving Lord Krishna. That is why Rupa Goswami hammers that point in Nectar of Devotion. At the end of the day, I may give you 64 principles, but the highest is always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So that is about pride and humility. Also, another aspect of humility is when Lord Krishna actually starts dancing with the gopis, for a moment every gopi starts thinking Lord Krishna is only dancing with me, so I am very special. So Lord Krishna immediately disappears from their vision, and that's when the whole principle of Vipralambha manifests. Right? So if we become proud, Lord Krishna can withdraw his mercy anytime. If he did it with the gopis, why won't he do it with us? And then the speciality of Radharani, that is the highest principle of Rasayatra, which means out of all the gopis, one gopi is the most special. Nobody can take her position, and that is Srimati Radharani. Tulsi Vivah is the marriage of Tulsi Devi with Krishna. She was the daughter of a giant named Nemi and the faithful wife of a demon named Jalandhar. Very briefly, Jalandhar had control over all the ocean. He was a demonic personality, husband of Tulsi, who was known as Vrinda Devi. Okay. So he demands all the treasures of the ocean, churned from the ocean, in Vishnu's second incarnation. He declares war and becomes a cause of danger for all the demigods. Therefore, he is virtually invincible. He has got a benediction that unless his wife loses her chastity, nobody can kill him. So what a powerful benediction he had. I mean, you can't do it. And his wife is very chaste. Who can break the chastity of Vrinda Devi? Right? Except Lord himself, who is her Lord and Master. So Vishnu comes and beguiles Vrinda, assuming her husband's form. And when she knows that, she curses Vishnu. Of course, it's not a curse in one sense. We know the relationship between them. But she curses Vishnu in this pastime and turns Vishnu into a black stone, which is called as Shaligram Shila. That is what we call a Shaligram. For his deceit. Lord Vishnu too retaliates in a different way. But in admiration of her impeachable chastity and piety, he transfers her into the sacred Tulsi plant and promises to marry her annually every day on this day of Kartik. So that is Tulsi Vivah. Finally, last part, Bhishma Panchaka or Vishnu Panchaka. That is also ending today. Kartik month is ending today. It's a 5-day fast which I hear many devotees are doing during the last month of Kartik. So this is just for the information of those who do not know about it and who would like to do it next year. Grandfather Bhishma did this Bhishma Panchaka fasting for these 5 days, preparing to give up his life. There are two parts of Bhishma Panchaka. One is the part of austerity and other is the part of worship. Both are mentioned in Hari Bhakti Vilasa, and it is optional, Bhishma Panchaka. The austerity part is fasting begins by remembering Bhishma Dev on the Ekadashi day and should end on Purnima, the full moon. Observing fasting from certain foodstuffs for the pleasure of the Lord, only fruits and roots, no grains. One can take panchagavya, which is milk, ghee, yogurt, cow urine or dung. Sleeping on a mat, bathing at least twice a day, abstaining from sex and giving in charity. And we have got a very good opportunity. As Bhakta Prabhu was mentioning and Sukhdev Prabhu was mentioning, we have the TOVP. It's a very good opportunity to do some to charity for Vishnu temple and perfection of our Bhishma Panchaka. So today we can take a vow and we can fulfill it on that day. Getting the benefits of... So by doing this process, by doing fasting, we get the benefits of even doing the Chaturmasya. If by chance we have not done that, we get the full benefits. The Padma Purana says, and here is the benediction, the Padma Purana says that one who does follows this Bhishma Panchaka pleases the Lord, makes immense spiritual advancement with such austerities, and if you are a Krishna devotee, can get entrance into the pastimes of the Lord. So that is the austerities part. The worship part is, in Bhishma Panchaka, the Lord is worshipped with Padma, the lotus flower, which is offered to the feet of the Lord, Bilva leaves, which are offered to the thighs of the Lord, Gandha or scents, which are offered to the navel of the Lord, Java flower offered to the shoulders of the Lord, and Malati flower to the head or Shirodesh of the Lord. And finally, the worship is increased number of chanting, more number of rounds. So this covers our main theme and the 4 parts today. Mahatma Prabhu. Sir, end the class here. Sorry, it's 9:30 now. Any questions, corrections or comments? No. Okay. Bhakta Prabhu advises me it's time up. So we will have any conversations outside, not within this forum. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Itai Gaur Premanandi ki jai.